evening. And after that intro, does anyone else get the impression that we're being watched?
I thought that was the whole idea.
Well, they're not supposed to be watching us. I signed the paperwork that clearly said no live cameras.
You're imagining things. No one is watching us.
To be fair, I'm not sure anyone's listening either.
What's that red light doing on the console?
I think it's saying something in old Morse code.
No, that's just the we're live on air light. It's got a loose connection. Flossie can probably fix it. Hang on. That was the wrong bar. Hang on, Flossie. Hang on, Flossie. Oh!
There it goes. Try it now.
Right. Oh, yes, and a bit of this.
Seamless.
You see, absolutely seamless. Well, that's working me up a bit. Right, and on that resonant note, I suppose it's time for some headlines. I'm going to get the right one this time. Look. Politics is a load of rot, confirms Pilots Federation.
I see an icy station.
Inflation hits shipyards.
Alec Turner Subtle Mob experiences go literary.
DIY dentistry. Just don't.
I delve into the philosophy of pioneer colonists.
And I look at the Weltanschauung of Hutton.
The Pilots Federation confirmed this week what many in the galaxy had long suspected. The galaxy's political infrastructure is crumbling from the inside out. In a formal communique, they admitted that decay had been detected not just in fringe regions, but right in the heart of superpower territory. And not just metaphorical decay, though there's plenty of that too, but an actual, measurable erosion of control, influence, and the will to attend committee meetings. The declaration has sent a wave of controlled unease through the power corridors from Nanomam to Kamadenu, with aides now tasked with checking whether stronghold status still actually means anything, or if the office carpet has already started curling at the edges. The process, described in bureaucratic terms as a weekly non-linear decay of control scores, sounds harmless enough, until one realises it's a bit like discovering that the glossy facade of your headquarters conceals a support structure made primarily of political driftwood. Under the new regime, systems which appear to be 100% loyal to any given power may in fact be quietly disintegrating into apathy and local infighting. No power is safe. The more firmly a faction grips its territory, the faster it erodes. They say power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, but now we can add, too much power makes the whole place smell faintly of Cubicle 3.
This is a completely natural process,
said Imperius Glorbax, senior executive adjunct to the Federation's Committee for Influence Persistence and Rot Detection.
A certain amount of decay is to be expected in any mature galactic entity. We call it planned obsolescence of stability. Very on trend.
Critics of the system, including Baroness Vixella Duthrang, vice-chair of the Imperial Decorative Statues and Political Cover-Ups Committee, were less than convinced.
This sort of rot wouldn't be tolerated in the Empire,
she stated flatly.
Not without a full investigation, at least 6 commemorative plaques, an orgy, and someone being ceremonially fired into a sun.
Indeed, the Pilots' Federation were quick to point out that the decay, while severe, will never reduce a system's loyalty below the 25% threshold, just enough to ensure plausible deniability when a system quietly topples into insurrection. Meanwhile, commanders involved in reinforcing these slowly spoiling systems have found that their efforts are now subject to recalibrated incentives. Those attempting to shore up loyal but unthreatened systems may now earn less for their work, while those putting out active fires receive enhanced rewards. Even offensive operations now enjoy a tidy merit bonus, so long as they're aimed at another power system and not one of those free-floating ones that no one really wanted anyway.
We've found that attacking people is more popular when it's rewarded,
explained independent analyst Professor Mandrel Nubb, who specialises in the socio-psychological incentives of space-based passive aggression. The Alliance Assembly, when approached for comment, confirmed only that their subcommittee on the linguistic framing of deteriorative concepts has agreed to call the process ambient destabilisation going forwards. As citizens and commanders alike ponder what these changes mean for their weekly errands and allegiances, one thing has become clear. Decay is here to stay. At least until someone fills out the correct form to stop it. The entire episode, of course, gives Rotten Borough an entirely new spacefaring spin.
A newly constructed orbital facility embedded within a hollowed-out ice asteroid has entered operational status this week. Commissioned by the ever-ambitious King Hanky, formerly of Colonia and long associated with structurally adventurous architecture, the station marks a notable expansion of infrastructure into cryogenic terrain. Known colloquially as Ice Station Zebra Crossing, due to a mix-up between the signage request forms and the safety paperwork for the little yellow beepy cars that travel around the inside of the station, the facility is suspended within the interior cavity of the ice asteroid by a tensegrity framework and an abundance of exposed power cabling. Official documentation suggests a mixed-use designation, though clearly on what those uses might be remains elusive. The apology officer has raised a point of order that possibly it should be a pelican and not a zebra, but unsupervised pelicans are not recommended for internal usage. Early visitors have reported the presence of a functioning bar, the Frosty Ferret, where all drinks are served at suboptimal thermal levels. According to bar staff, this isn't merely thematic, it's practical.
We don't refrigerate,
explained Chief Mixologist Travis Punk.
We simply leave things on the counter and wait 15 seconds.
Several recreational enhancements are already in evidence, including a penguin habitat occupying the inner equatorial track. The penguins, originally acquired for a failed Empire-approved wildlife documentary, have adjusted to life in a rotating low-gravity ice shell and can frequently be seen using the spin to perform long arcing slides past the station's observation decks. Filtered starlight passing through the thick ice walls gives the station a diffused internal glow, shifting subtly when the asteroid's rotation. The light is soft, indirect, and evenly distributed, sufficient for operational visibility and noted in early design reviews as pleasantly ambient. While entirely unintended, the result has proven visually striking, casting gentle gradients across bulkheads and giving the impression of a permanent early evening, regardless of the actual hour. The conditions have also made the station a popular destination for space Inuit communities. The consistent cold, combined with the opportunity for ice-based construction within a pressurized environment, has led to the establishment of several temporary settlements along the lower radial trusses. A cooperative now operates out of Coolant Tank 3, offering fresh synth fish and a highly regarded fermented seal analogue to passing visitors. The attraction may, in part, be cultural nostalgia, Earth's original ice caps having long since retreated to near nothingness, replaced by spray-painted rock and giant floating polystyrene shelves. Unconfirmed reports also suggest that King Hanky's personal collection of snakes has been relocated to a dedicated vivarium deep in the station's thermal core. The habitat is maintained at a temperature sufficiently high to have caused minor structural melt-throughs during initial calibration. Three snakes are believed to have exited the asteroid entirely, crash-landed the vivarium on a nearby geothermically active moon, and now lead a small but rapidly organized local government.
This facility represents a fusion of extreme environment habitation and deeply questionable logistics,
said Hutton's architecture correspondent, Dervish Clegg.
It is unclear whether it is a station, a zoo, or a performance art piece. It's possibly all three.
Official access is currently restricted to certified visitors and anyone with crampons, good balance, and an adequate tolerance for condensation-related slip hazards. King Hanky is expected to issue a formal statement once the penguins stop making strange noises over the intercom.
Ship manufacturers across the bubble have adjusted their ARC pricing structure this month, confirming that even in the vacuum of space, inflation continues to expand. In anticipation of the Panther Clipper Mark II's arrival on the 22nd of July 3311, the Pilots Federation had introduced a tiered cost model for early access ships. New small and medium vessels, including the Guttermeier Corsair, Cobra Mark V, Lacon Type 8 and the Mandalay, will require
some
ARCs for standard acquisition. A more premium version, known as the Stellar Tier, will cost
quite a bit.
Larger ships, such as the Panther Clipper Mark II, have been placed in a new bracket entirely, priced at
lots
for standard and
shed loads
for the Stellar Edition. Shipbuilders, for their part, have welcomed the new scheme, citing rising costs of heat-resistant glue, permit application forms and the particularly steep licensing fees involved in naming a vessel something intimidating without using a hyphen. As to the timing of this shift, industry insiders point to the upcoming release of the Squadron Carrier and Vanguard's initiative in August as a likely catalyst. With more ships expected to follow later this year, two additional models already teased, the restructured tiers appear to be to lay the groundwork for a future in which vessels are not just built to order, but to budget.
In a competitive galactic market,
said Faustin Plegg of the Interstellar Pricing Board, an accountant by the sounds of him,
a flexible monetization is not just a necessity, it's a hallmark of sector resilience. Also, we ran out of small ships people hadn't already bought.
Reaction among pilots has been mixed, though broadly resigned. As one anonymous trader put it,
well, it's still cheaper than hull reinforcements, and slightly less painful than a pad loitering fine.
More vessels are expected to enter early access later in 3311. Pricing categories beyond shed loads have not yet been announced, but preparations are reportedly underway.
Commander Alec Turner, racing driver, stunt pilot and frontman of the Alec Turner Subtle Mob Experience, Silent Disco Band, has presented his latest work this week, cunningly titled Alec's Guide to Interesting Colonization Systems and Stations, in a galaxy increasingly saturated with functionally identical installations. Turner's guide promises a curated look at those rare locations that offer something more than just a landing pad and a data terminal. The guide opens with a clear sense of purpose. Turner is not interested in economic value or strategic relevance. He's looking for locations that evoke a reaction. Stations with scenic placement, curious names, architectural oddities, or quietly meaningful backstories. The result is a collection of entries that feels less like a logistics document and more like a travel journal. Among the examples highlighted, the Devil's Tower in Heidi's sector ZU-YD684B, where Turner has terraformed the peak to echo its cinematic namesake. The Happy Bottom Riding Club, also in ZU-YD684B, whose cheeky name and copper grey palette are representative of Turner's fondness for whimsy. City Gizzard, in NLTT-10259, an orbital starport balanced halfway over a mountain's edge. Grover Platform, in Tukenai AA-ZB06, once the setting for a zero-g parkour challenge before being cautiously levelled. Lantern Light, an installation near a rapidly spinning neutron star, briefly notable for its unusually persistent local landmark status. Turner stresses accessibility. He encourages pilots to record full system and station names, secure permissions before entering privately sponsored sites, and avoid completing instructions where the unfinished state is part of the intended visual effect. His own installations receive particular attention. In ZU-YD684B, visitors will find Camp Bucky, a construction yard catering to the rally crowd, Draka Point, a designated finish line for the 3311 Draka Rally, Crater Edge Spectations, a low-grav observation deck and bar overlooking twin impact craters, the Piceus Azafhart Volcanic Microbrewery, located within a semi-active vent field and known for serving what Turner describes as probably the gassiest beer in the galaxy. Hutton Orbital itself has recently submitted two entries for inclusion, one for their newly acquired station orbiting a black hole, and another for what is believed to be the longest mandatory supercruise in human history. Both entries are currently pending approval, largely due to ongoing disputes about whether navigational endurance constitutes aesthetic value, and whether disorientation can be listed as a scenic feature. In contrast to the blunt practicality of the traditional station registries, Turner's guide reads more like an adventure traveller's dossier. Each listing carries not just coordinates, but a sense of the character of each location. More than just a list, the guide is an invitation. These are not logistical hubs or transit points, they are destinations. And in Turner's SRV control calloused hands, that distinction matters.
A number of surface miners have been admitted to the Hutton Orbital Infirmary this week, following what medical staff described as a combination of exposure, nutrient neglect, and highly unconventional dental work. The affected individuals, all part of the loosely affiliated mineral extraction group, orienting in the outer orbital regions of an uninhabited system, were Apex taxied back to Hutton after their expedition significantly outlasted its original two-week plan. According to the preliminary assessments, the group have been on planet for somewhere between 6 and 12 standard weeks. Exact duration remains unclear. Symptoms reported on arrival included dehydration, mild protein hallucination, fatigue, and in one case, partial fusion to a camping chair. Triage teams attributed most of these ailments to a breakdown in a scheduled supply of drops and an over-reliance on tinned kippers. The miners themselves cited poor communication and an overcommitment to resource extraction. Matters were further complicated when one team member of the team, identified only as Kev, developed a severe toothache and opted for what the group described as a precision root canal using controlled force. The improvised procedure employed a micro-explosive typically used for piton setting. It was inserted into the molar in question and detonated under conditions that are not generally covered by medical licensing. The group reportedly used generator coolant as a substitute for anesthetic mouthwash, and while it did achieve limited bacterial control, it also removed a patch of enamel that caused the operating party to briefly forget how to pronounce the letter L. Senior Nurse Wythe described the group's overall condition as relatively stable given the circumstances. Though added, several are being kept under observation until they stop shouting at the vending machine. No criminal charges are expected to be filed, though a strongly worded advisory has been issued by the Miners Safety Collective, reminding operatives that explosives are not suitable for dental anesthesia, no matter how persuasive the pain becomes. The Hutton Infirmary has confirmed that all the affected miners are now receiving standard rehydration nutritional support and compulsory dental consultation. The spoon has not been returned.
This week from the Hutton Science Department, we have news of a newly published ethnopsychological review into Generation Ship culture. The article has uncovered, that is literally what the script says, elevated levels of philostrogy, a form of deep parental affection, among long-term shipboard populations. Analysis of telemetry, biometric logs, and oral records from 15 pre-frameshift vessels indicates that confined intergenerational isolation intensifies familial bonding beyond planetary norms. The Generation Ship Thetis featured formal maming rights, community-vetted lullabies, and a 64-clause parenting charter preserved across three backup cores. Meanwhile, Demeter employed rotational co-parenting, with each child assigned multiple non-biological guardians. Rather than causing confusion, this produced adults of almost paralyzing moral certainty, prone to lengthy ethical debates and excessive civic tidiness. A similar phenomenon has been noted at Hutton Orbital, known informally as Locational Familial Fixation Syndrome, or LOFAFIX. It affects residents who arrive and simply never leave. Symptoms include extreme station loyalty, adoption of unrelated roommates as kin, and compulsive involvement in mug distribution logistics. Advanced cases exhibit territorial attachment to specific corridors, and a belief that shift change announcements are part of a shared oral tradition. A formal study is being proposed, pending available funding and appropriate authorisation.
Welcome to the Hutton BGS bit, where we walk straight up to the Hutton BGS, question its parentage, and then run away before it smacks us one. This week, expansion, blah-de-blah-de-blah. Booms are in Narensis, Rigger, Wolf 359, LHS 3356, 36 Ophiuchi, 61 Cygni, Delta 1 Camulontis, Leuton 143-23, Talta, Barnard Star, and Wolf 124. The Wolf 359 is sharing that boom state with an infrastructure failure. Ross 671 and Wise 1405 plus 5543, I mean, they could just have called it Wise 9639, have paired their booms with a drought. There is a very small election in AU Microscopy, where Hutton is just ahead of the Green Party of Sameni. We also have a tiny election pending in Dabi Minor, and Delta 2 Camulontis, I do beg your pardon, sees us in election with the co-op of Omana. Hutton is narrowly winning a war in LaSalle 8760 against the LaSalle 8760i Corp, and we are losing a war in LHS 3356 against the EG Union. We are at war with the Star Pilots and Ministry as well. But what does it all mean? Well, if you want to shoot it, then get yourself over to one of those war zones. If you want to mission run, then run those missions in one of the election systems. And if you want to truck it, then truck food and water into Ross 671 or Wise 1405 plus 5534. You can also truck food and machinery into Wolf 359 to help with the infrastructure failure. And that's it for this week's Hutton BGS bit. I'm away for a lie down now.